Welcome, everyone, to Good Night and Good Game, your source for geek news for the week that was. I'm your host, James, and with me, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Hector.
Hello.
This week on the show, instead of doing an all-news episode like we've done so many times, we've just beaten that horse. It's a horrible turn of phrase to use. We've done that a lot. What we're going to do is something very different. We're going to do an all-boss room episode. So how is this going to break down? Essentially, we've had some topics that we've been wanting to chat about a little bit deeper than the 5 to 10 minutes that we normally give on our show proper. So we decided we would just grab these topics, put them all together. There's 4 total. And we would just dive into those because there's some interesting stuff that we've been wanting to talk about. This is going to be all over the place, by the way. There's nothing thematically about why these topics are together. They are just 4 that have been sitting on our pile of talk about shame for a while. It's like, oh yeah, let's just go ahead and knock this out. With the exception of one of them that is current news. But before we start, don't forget that you could head over to goodnight.gg, where as a patron of our show, you can suggest topics for us to talk about. Also, as a patron, you get access to our off-week episodes. We're doing a bunch of action films. We actually need to record a few more episodes about what we've been watching, but those will get released soon. So yeah, the mini episodes have been a lot of fun. Yeah. All right, with all the intros out of the way, it's time for the Boss Rooms.
Boss Rooms, plural.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show. It's time for the Boss Rooms. Yeah, this is just going to be a random assortment of topics, so I'm going to throw one out, and we're going to start talking about it. So the first thing that we're going to be discussing, our first Boss Room out of 4, is the end of live service games.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. So to give some context to what I'm saying here, you will have noticed over the last several months, many live services games have begun closing down. Mm-hmm. People like Square Enix launched things like Chocobo Racing or whatever the heck it was on mobile, closed it down as a live service pretty soon. As of today, as of the day of recording, the Gundam first-person shooter game that came out just before Overwatch 2 did, so it has been not even a year, maybe.
Not a year, yeah.
Has closed its doors. Bandai Namco said, nope, not financially feasible.
Yep, servers going down, everyone fuck off.
Right. So let's talk about the why, how we feel about it. Let's talk about the end of live service games.
Yeah, I mean, the writing was always on the wall. It's almost like we remember after WoW when everyone wanted to make an MMO. And very few could actually produce one because MMOs are a metric fuck ton of work. And it's so expensive. And you actually do have to be creative and you actually do have to make something people want.
Right. As we saw from a lot of the games that came out of the Korean MMO market, there were a lot of MMOs that came out of there that made a lot of money in a short amount of time. And then the game just kind of ended. Things like Lineage just kind of happened. But they were always very generic. They were just very, you know, copy paste. Hey, let's do fantasy, let's do Lord of the Rings, let's do not WoW.
Yeah.
But it didn't have the charm that World of Warcraft did. The only exception to that that survived during that time was Final Fantasy XI. Mm-hmm. And to this day, when we talk about these MMOs, because they are live service games, they very rarely work except for Final Fantasy XIV now and WoW.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. There are a few hangers-on out in the world that has
Eve doesn't count.
No, Eve doesn't count. I'm thinking like Guild Wars 2.
Right.
Things with small but very, very like avid fan bases who are like, I fucking love this game. I play every expansion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a small enough base that Guild Wars 2 is still fucking going.
Yeah, sure. But I will say, when we talk about live service games, I want you to understand that we're not talking about MMOs in particular here.
No.
Really what we're talking about is these games you see pop up have a million microtransactions in them based off the phone model of making video games and then disappearing after a year or so after it stops being profitable.
Right. You were talking like, and there's a lot of games that we like and some we don't like. For example, Overwatch 2, kind of a live service game.
It is absolutely 100%
live service. You're talking about a game that's free to play with a ton of microtransactions with content that is supposed to be added every month. And the content trickles out slowly because they're being imagine a developer finishing a project on time. Like no one ever budgets their release dates correctly for that.
Right.
Cyberpunk is a great example. But what we're seeing here is live service game after live service game shut down in less than a year. I mean, and the thing that really bothers me about this is when you think about the MMOs of the world that all came out, made a little bit of a splash, and then immediately died. There's the same thing going on with live service games, except live service games, even though they are complex to create, are much, much easier to create than MMO.
Right.
So you have a lot of them in the pipeline, a lot of them coming out with huge properties like Gundam. Yep. And then they just die. They go out and they either don't have the fan base, or they stop paying the artists and they stop paying the programmers and the writers because they just, you know, don't have the money to continue this and make it profitable.
Exactly.
And what worries me about this is right now, when Sony decided to buy Bungie and bought like a bunch of other studios and were like, hey, let's talk about the future of PlayStation 5, they announced at least two big ones we know in the pipe, but that they had something like five live service games coming in the next 2 to 3 years. They specifically bought
companies to make live service games.
And they tasked Bungie with making a live service game on Marathon.
Yep.
Which a lot of people are very excited for. But when you know what kind of game it is, you're like,
it doesn't sound great.
Doesn't sound like it's going to keep a lot of butts in seats to me. Like Super Duper doesn't, which is worrying, because as we're sitting here talking about the death of live service games and how none of them last long, which the audience is not only noticing, but it's making them not go after new ones.
Yep.
You have to know that like the writing is already on the wall. So maybe I don't know what you should do with those games, but you should do something with them.
Right, because when we're talking about live service games, I mean, in a lot of ways, this could be directly correlated to the abundance of streaming platforms that we currently have going on, right? I play multiple live service games on my phone. I don't really pay for them. Mm-hmm. Like, they're free to play. If I do, quote unquote, spend money on the game, it's a game that's earned my time. And also, I just do, like, the Google rewards when they just ask you quiz questions and give you money. So that's my currency that I use to play silly mobile games.
Yeah, for sure.
But when I think about a lot of those games... they do care about my time. Mm-hmm. They're not overly trying to get me to spend on them.
Not trying to get you to grind the game forever.
Yeah, you're not trying to get to grind the game forever. Like, you know, there's a type of live service game that does exist that I think will still go into the future. Your things like Genshin Impact, like it's a live service game. Yeah,
well, Genshin Impact for sure. But that's a gachapon game. Right. So that one's a little strange as far as that goes, because the idea in the game is to spend money. Like, that's the idea.
Right.
It's a fucking, you know, it's a Cracker Jack box. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you can play the game, sure, and there's a lot of game to play, and there's a lot of fun to be had, but part of the game is fucking buying your Cracker Jacks.
It's very true.
And when we talk about the market for live service games, and we keep comparing it to MMOs, you basically have your two or three that survive. Yeah. And what do we have outside of MOBAs, which don't count because it's a MOBA, it's not a live service game? You have your Fortnite, you have your Apex Legends, and you have whatever the third one you want to pick is the third one, because that's debatable.
Yeah.
But you have those two, and they're on top, and they're kind of not really going anywhere.
Yep.
I guess you know what you could throw in there that's the fucking whale of whales is Grand Theft Auto 5 Online.
Yeah, that's a weird outlier. Well,
which is, it's an outlier because you have to pay for it up front. But that's really the only bit.
But that is the Blizzard model with Diablo.
That's true.
Diablo 4, we're about to get our first season of that. And and people are not happy about it.
Oh, they're not happy about the patch and about what they're doing to the game. No, not at all. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, but it's not a Diablo game if the fans don't hate it for at least a little while.
Right, very true.
But yeah, so you basically have your big two or big three. I'm really hoping, like, Marathon is at least a little fun, because that's a franchise I love to death. The lore of that game blows my mind every time I think about it.
It is Dark Souls level of deep.
Yeah, it is amazing. But I just hope that game is good. But yeah, the writing's on the wall for this genre. People are getting sick of it the same way they get sick of every oversaturated genre.
Right.
And it's kind of incumbent upon these games coming down the pipeline to breathe some life into the genre.
Yeah.
Because I guess, like, you still have your PUBGs swimming around surviving, but, like, they're not what they were. Mm. They're not, you know, I don't think PUBG's in the top five anymore. So, like, yeah. I mean, I have no idea.
To kind of go back to where my earlier comparison was, you know, these live service games being, like, streaming services, in that there are so many of them, and at some point you look at how many of them you're paying for, and you go, how many of these are really necessary to my time?
Yeah.
Or how many of these are time wasters, or could I be doing something else?
Right.
You know, there's a lot of ways to view that. So.
And that's the kind of thing about these types of games is, per user, they will pick their favorite and they will stick with it. Because it doesn't make any sense to invest a little bit in three live service games. It makes a lot more sense to be really good at one and have that one be where you spend your money.
Right. So I guess as we start to wind down the first topic, for you, Hector, can you just tell me what you think makes for a good live service game versus a bad one?
Absolutely. So My favorite example of good live service games is Apex Legends. Apex Legends is an offshoot from Titanfall made by the same studio. And at first I was really upset because I just wanted more Titanfall. But honestly, the shooting mechanics were all there. They were amazing. The movement was amazing. The weapons were all really cool. And the fighting system eventually made sense to me. They support their Game Pass very well. You can always earn enough currency in the previous pass to buy the next one. Looking at you, Overwatch, like where's that at? They have constant updates with really good art and really good themes. And they release stuff all the time. They've kept up with it. It's been profitable because the people who play it less so for the buying shit and more so for just the rock solid shooting mechanics that are Respawn Gaming, that gave us games like Titanfall. I mean, if they decided tomorrow that Apex Legends has mechs in it from Titanfall, I'd immediately start playing again.
Right.
Like, immediately. So what I'm saying, so what does that say about what makes a good live service game? An existing property in a world that people want to live in. And I know that's not the case for things like PUBG Escape from Tarkov.
Sure.
You know, I haven't even mentioned some of them that I actually play. Mm-hmm. Or Fortnite. It's not the case with Fortnite. But Fortnite gets around that by putting every other franchise into Fortnite.
Mm-hmm.
Coming from an existing franchise, if it's going to be a shooter, it needs to be a good fucking shooter.
Yep.
If it's going to be a platformer, it needs to be a great fucking platformer. If you're a little bit okay at both, you're Fallout 3. Get out of my face. familiarity and honestly, just if you put a good game in there, people will find it and people will play it. Mm-hmm. That's why Escape from Tarkov is as popular as it is as a live service
game. So what makes for bad ones then?
Shitty gameplay. That's really all I can say. And I know that's really obvious because like shitty games, gameplay makes for shitty games. Not always true. You look at the Jedi Fallen Order and Survivor. Not saying the gameplay is shitty. I'm saying it started off kind of bad in Fallen Order, but people played through that game because it was an existing property. They love the franchise. They love the characters. And it wasn't all that bad. I've played some of those live service shooters and they play like actual shit. Like, it is bad. I feel like I'm just rubbing my hands in shit instead of controlling a character. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. So I think what makes a bad one is just not knowing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, no familiarity with the concept, which is why I have so much hope for Marathon, because it's Bungie. If Bungie knows anything, it's shooting mechanics. They practically invented them.
Yeah.
So they got it down. A bad one is a game poorly made, a game cynically made, a game made with the hope of selling loot boxes rather than providing a good experience to encourage.
Right. And I think that's a big one for me. It's you being respectful of my time.
Mm-hmm.
So that I feel like I'm making progress, but without having to spend money, feeling like my money spent is being thought of as valuable.
Mm-hmm.
League of Legends actually has one of the best skin models on the face of the planet. Aside from the fact the game is free and you can get everything for free, but the costumes you buy with in-game currency that you can earn and or just get.
Mm-hmm.
And their skins are great. Yeah. They're like $1 to $5.
Yeah.
That's bright. But then we talk about Overwatch 2, a game that you and I both play obsessively.
In
Overwatch 2, I haven't bought a single damn skin because they're $20 a pop.
Yeah, at $20 for a admittedly neat, not amazing, not blow my face off, neat skin for a character that I like is like a bridge too far doesn't cover it. It's a county too far.
Right.
It is just like, I will not meet you there. I will not meet you anywhere close to there. $10. Right. $10. Is a good price for a season pass worth of content. Not a single skin.
Yep.
A skin for a character in a video game should never, ever, ever be more than $2 to $3.
Mm.
If your most epic legendary skin is $5, I'm probably not going to buy it.
Mm.
It would have to be incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Like no, it's just I'm just not there. So yeah, $25-$30 for a character's ultimate skin plus like a weapon charm that matches it and like an icon that matches it. $30 fucking dollars.
Yep.
I don't know what Blizzard is smoking, but I don't want any.
We have so much Blizzard to talk about. By the way, the next couple topics are going to be about Blizzard. Oops. Let's move on to our next one, which is, this is the one that is actually a bit of news, and we don't have to stay on it too long, but this last week, the FTC lost their case against Microsoft for the purchase of Activision. Basically, the FTC took them to court and said, look, here's the deal. They dropped the monopoly argument. Their big argument, like we said the last time we did this show, came down to, will PlayStation get Call of Duty? That's all this court case was about. Sony made a stink about Call of Duty, and Microsoft said, yeah, we're just going to put Call of Duty on your console. We found out after this court case happened and wrapped up this week, Sony and Microsoft came to a deal
to put specifically about Call of Duty.
That's it.
And now no one cares. Right. And now the FTC is like, well, I guess we're done.
So what we just went through was this obnoxious court trial for the better part of 3 weeks in which these people on the FTC side were asking questions that they just didn't understand with the questions they were asking.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, they asked them no less than like 6 times, if you get Activision Blizzard, will you put Call of Duty on the PlayStation? Mm-hmm. And like we said last week, their answer was always, of course, it would be financially like stupid of us to like not do the thing.
Yep. Like, and we have to. We literally have to, because if we don't, we will not be able to sell as many copies as we normally sell in this game.
Mind and you, they are buying now. They are buying Blizzard, Activision Blizzard King for $6.95 billion.
Factor of 10, sir. It's nearly $70 billion.
That's right. Yeah, it's like $70 billion.
It's like $69 billion.
Yeah.
68.9, something like that.
Yeah.
It's the most anyone has ever paid for probably literally anything.
Right.
And the only way they will ever make that money back is if Call of Duty keeps performing the way that it does, and maybe even more so.
Yep.
So, yeah, not putting it on PlayStation would be a omega level mistake.
So, because it's Boss Room, and we do rumor and speculation in Boss Room, what does this mean next, do you think? Just off the top of your head.
I mean, what I hope it means is that everyone at ABK, maybe, I don't know anything about the K side of the company, but everyone at AB, above like a working human, management and up, middle management and up, gets fucking out. Like, this, you know, they come in and they're like, we're putting our own people in charge because y'all a bunch
of... You can't be trusted.
Y'all a bunch of Cosby-rooming motherfuckers, and we need you out. Bobby Kotick, you too. You threatened to have a woman killed on your airplane.
Yep.
Like everyone out. We're bringing in our own management, and we're going to run things better. Whoever's deciding what happened in Diablo 4, get the fuck out, bro. Whoever, you know, whoever decides that Overwatch skins are $20, leave.
Right.
Leave now. And we're going to put our own people in, and we're going to make things bring some normalcy and some decency back to this company.
I hope the first thing that they do, this is just me being hopeful, is they fucking, you know, obviously get the management the fuck out.
Yep.
They grab the workers, the people who make these products. They have meetings for every single group. So the Overwatch group, the Diablo group, whatever. Oh. They pull them all into an auditorium and go, all right, if you could fix the game that you are currently working on, what would you recommend? Yep. Or what have players recommended, or any of the above?
Yeah. Are you even listening?
Yeah.
Like, do you have like an ear from the developers to the players? Like, do you have that pipeline going?
Right. And on top of all of that, while y'all are here, all of you are going to get more than a livable wage.
Yeah.
And we are going to take care of you going forward.
Yeah. That's all I want. Yeah. Is just for them to say, hey, we're going to actually pay you guys because you make some of the most popular games on earth.
Yep.
And we couldn't do it without you.
Mm-hmm.
Here's money.
Yes.
That's literally all they want. And then they'll have no turnover problems. They'll have like, the talent will stay.
Yeah.
You won't lose like super key people, and you end up making Diablo 4 worse, like immediately after launching it. Yeah, I mean, that's what I think the future is. I think, you know, hopefully it brings Microsoft up in the industry a little bit more. Yeah. I feel like Sony needs more competition than they're currently getting, because that's what brings the best out of them. That's when we get our Naughty Dog style studios making incredible things. That's when we get, you know, the real creativity is when they're trying to compete with the Gears of Wars of the world, with the Halo 3s of the world, you know? So that's what I hope. I hope that this deal literally makes everything better.
Absolutely.
I know somewhere deep down, and maybe I'm wrong. I really hope I'm not wrong. I'm knocking on wood. I believe there is no downside to this deal for the industry.
For Microsoft buying out Activision.
For Microsoft, Blizzard. Yeah. I cannot see how Microsoft as a company, because they have a very decent record of taking care of their people. It's not the best, but it's far, far from what they have now with Activision Blizzard.
Well, remember, Microsoft is the company that said, should people want to unionize, that is their right.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't see a downside for the industry. I see more competition is better, and Microsoft getting this might get them back to where they need to be when they were actually competition for Sony.
Yeah.
In the wars, you know, we're talking like fifth, sixth generation or so.
Yeah.
That would be great. I really don't see a downside. Yet you could say like, oh, well, you know, more things in the smaller hands. It's like that will always happen anyway. It's like fewer hands will always have more things until we make them stop.
Yep.
But these hands are better than the hands they're currently in. And that's, you know, that's kind of where I land on the whole issue.
Right. We have one more bit of Activision Blizzard stuff to talk about. This is also news from this week. Let's talk rumor and speculation, because we can do that in the boss rooms.
Yep.
The facts are these. This last week, the Overwatch League, part of Activision Blizzard, laid off 50 employees. And they talked about the future of the Overwatch League. They talked about how it has not been profitable in the 5 to 6 years that it's been out there. Mm-hmm. That they're having, you know, some difficulties with the league and the way that it's currently set up and currently being run. And there's a lot of factors to this. But if essentially what they said was, like, at the end of this year of the Overwatch League, we are going to give all the teams an option. And they have to decide as a supermajority, stay in and try and turn the boat around, or y'all get $6 million and we call it a day.
Basically buying out the franchises. Things like, you know, the Houston Outlaws, the Dallas Fuel, I guess they're still Dallas. Yeah. You know, the all the teams. Know, all the California teams, everything in between, the Atlanta Reign is, you know, would you like to stay on board, or we will buy you out for this amount of money? Mm-hmm. And I don't know who that money goes to, but, you know, it's almost certainly not the players.
Right.
But, it's a buyout that basically signals, if y'all want to wrap this up, let's wrap it up.
Right.
And from what we're hearing out of Blizzard right now, they're basically openly admitting that the Overwatch League, that Overwatch 2 is losing interest, and that the Overwatch League is going the same way.
Right.
And it sounds almost like they're looking for an out early. It's like, look, if this is the writing on the wall, let's just cancel it before we do another year of it. Because nobody wants to go out with their last year having like very few eyes on it, like, you know, a small amount of eyes. It's just the sad year, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I know they don't want to do like if half the teams decide to take a payout, they're like, well, we're done. You know, at that point, like, there's no point in putting on the league. There's no point in doing all of that. Mm-hmm. But if people decide to stay, I think there's a lot they need to fix.
Right.
We were listening to Plat Chat, and they were saying like these long winters between like series need to stop. You can't have 6 months of no Overwatch and then have people come back and be like, yay, finally.
Right.
Because, yeah, it doesn't really work, man. Like, people go off and do other things. 6 months is a long fucking time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, that's...
I personally do want to see the Overwatch League continue because it is such a big part of my life.
Yeah, me too.
But I understand where they're coming from. It's just... It's looking at the money, looking at what's going on, and saying like, do we want to still keep this thing going? And it's hard. It's hard to want to say yes to keeping the thing going.
Mm-hmm. What I could see them doing is like just nixing the Overwatch League as a brand, as a franchise, all of that, and just letting the normal esports groups of the world build their Overwatch teams and do their own esports. I'd love to see the Cloud9 team of Overwatch. You know, the you know, Victus Gaming Pro Overwatch team doing their own esports with their own technology and their own, like, the thing they've been doing since Counter, you know, all the way back to Dota.
A lot of people predict that's what will happen to the Overwatch League. It just won't be owned by Activision Blizzard anymore.
Right.
And it's going to become an independent entity. Like, essentially what they do with Open Division. You know, so it'll be just the best of the best playing Overwatch, but it won't be bound by the rules of Activision Blizzard. Mm-hmm. And we'll watch those kind of more indie things happen.
Right.
It's a fascinating place thing to watch because it really is showing the fragility of esports in general. Because a lot of people have been wanting to buy into esports. A lot of people bought into the Call of Duty leagues. There's a Rocket League, you know, groups. And esports is it's freaking valid, man. It is sport. It is a sport. It is hard on the players. But it's even harder on the fact that like these players don't get paid like football players do.
No, they do not. No, yeah. You're talking like base salaries at the best of times of like 50 grand a year.
Yeah.
And then like bonuses based on performance. Mm-hmm. And not performance as in, oh, did you do well? Performance as in, did your team win any tournaments?
Right.
Because that's where the cash prizes come from. Exactly. So literally only the best get bonuses and the rest are subject to whatever they get paid by their team.
Yep.
That's not great.
So good luck to the Overwatch League. We are rooting for you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the future does not look great for it.
It doesn't. And I would be super sad to see it go. I would be super sad to see Overwatch 2 go the way the other live service games have. That would hurt me more.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, we're not saying farewell just yet. But I mean, we can kind of see it coming.
It's very true.
Yeah.
All right. Our last big topic for us to talk about. This is going to be a doozy. This is going to be most of our time. It is our boss room of boss rooms. I recently finished the final season of The Flash, the CW show. And I'm currently wrapping up the final season of Supergirl. Because I had forgot that I hadn't watched it. For good reason. It's very forgettable. Mm. But the CW Arrowverse shows have been with us for a very long time. Now they've all wrapped up. The only thing kind of still around is the Superman show. But it's not so, part
yeah,
of
Superman
the,
and Lois. Yeah, that one runs on, you know, Max, which is what the HBO streaming service.
Right. So I thought now would be a good time to talk about the end of the Arrowverse. Because everything's wrapped up. And the reason I want to talk about it is because I think it has more of a cultural impact than people
give it credit for,
right? Yeah. The Arrowverse came out at a time where we were barely getting into Marvel movies. We were getting maybe two a year if we were lucky.
Yeah, I want to say this was at a time like either right just before or just after the first Avengers, you know, so like 2012-ish. And we started getting Arrow, you know, and then when Arrow like season two came around, they introduced Barry Allen and it's like, oh, whoa. And, you know, they were doing their own thing. And Arrow was a cool fucking show for the first two seasons. I'm not going to lie. Like, show had its ups and downs. I think it ended on a very high note. Love Arrow. Everything about it. I was a huge fan. I wanted to be able to do a salmon ladder, you know, like,
right.
I was like, yeah, no, he was my fucking gymspiration, you know? Yeah. But, when you find out they were putting, you know, Barry Allen and you're like, oh, they're going to do another show. That was huge for me at the time. I was like, yeah, we're doing this on TV. Arrow's a cool show. Mm-hmm. It's gritty the way Arrow should be, but it's also like just comic booky enough to really catch your attention.
Yep.
The Flash was the same way. And yeah, this is, you know, before even, Age of Ultron, this is the many years between Avengers and Age of Ultron is when the bulk of the Arrowverse happened.
Yep.
Or at least the bulk of the beginnings of the Arrowverse. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's when we first got, not Guardians, they time travel.
Legends of Tomorrow.
Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Fucking great show. Excellent part of the Arrowverse.
Man, I hate to be that person because I hate when people say this kind of shit to me. Uh-huh. But I bring up Legends of Tomorrow and people will be like, I tried it. I didn't like it. I'm like... Right. So get past the first season, please. It's like The Office.
I would be like, skip the first season. Yeah. Start season two, episode one. When Sarah Lance is the captain, that's when you start watching that show.
Yep.
Because that's when it stopped trying to be serious Arrowverse show and was just like, so we have all these really fun characters.
Yep.
Like, can we just make it more of a comedy? Because this is going really well.
Well, and if you think of the time, most of the movies that we were seeing superhero-wise, even though we had fun things like Iron Man still took its content very seriously.
Mm-hmm. Right?
This, at the end of the day, is about weapons of mass destruction and, you know, people being flawed people. And, you know, it was all gritty and had to be very realistic. Even Thor had to be realistic in the things it was doing, even though it was dealing with magic. And Arrow was very serious in the way that it was. And even The Flash, even though it was fun and funny, still very like dark and grim.
Yeah, and everything was death and like, you know, the jokes were jokes about the situation. Right. It wasn't a funny premise.
Right. And then Legends of Tomorrow comes along and goes, not only, so like the first season, we're going to be super serious and we're going to be like the Arrowverse. So we're going to do that. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, like everybody just stopped paying attention to the writers for Legends of Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And they looked around the room and went, right, so we can do whatever we want, right? Like, yeah. Like we legitimately can do whatever we want. Okay, great. And we're going to break the fourth wall and we're going to bring in John Constantine and we're going to fucking have a giant shark show up and like, you know,
we're
like,
going to make one of our manliest, toughest characters a bodice ripper novel author.
Right.
And then we're going to bring characters from his hilarious fiction, like the three-breasted goth barbarian woman. We're just going to make her a character in the show for a little bit.
Right.
Because, you know, they really bought into the Good Places idea of like the timey wimey rhymey thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, you go in there and you just find some weird shit and you loop back around and here we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the important thing is not to worry about the continuity. The important thing is to have fun.
Right. And that was the best part about it, is it never made itself beholden to continuity.
Yeah. And they would do the meta commentary. One of my favorite bits that they ever did was almost a joke that lasted an entire season. Mm-hmm. Not because they told it all season long. It was two lines, one at the beginning of the first episode of the season, and one at the end of the last one. And it was right after the Arrowverse was doing one of their big crossovers.
I think it was Crisis. Doing that.
I think it was Earth X, the Nazi Earth-X one.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So everyone gets together and the legends are left out because you get the first episode.
Because they actually filmed it a different time.
Yeah, but you get the first episode of Legends and they're like, hey, everyone's calling us. They're getting together to fight some cut. And before she finishes a sentence, I think one of them walks by and goes, pass. And just kind of walks along. At the end of that season, they're facing like the biggest thing that they've ever fought. And they're like, should we call like the Flash and like Oliver and everyone? Like, I did. They said pass.
Yeah.
And it was just like, thank you. Thank you for this so much.
And I want to say it was maybe in the next season after that or something like, they made this joke a couple times where they were just like, yeah, we're not in the crossover this year.
Yeah.
Or like, is this because we weren't in the crossover?
Yes.
Like, it comes back around a whole lot.
And like the group, like fucking Barry and Oliver will be like, yes.
Yes, it's what it is. You weren't in the crossover.
You weren't in the crossover. Like even Kara knows it. She's not even from this universe. Mm. She was here.
Yeah. And I mean, there was good with the bad. You know, for every Legends of Tomorrow, we had like Batwoman.
Batwoman was
a tragedy.
Unfortunate.
Yeah.
The way that they ended up dealing with all of that.
Yeah. Because Batwoman had Ruby Rose as the main actress, and there were allegations of like abuse on set and some other stuff.
Yeah.
She ended up bowing out after the first season. We had a new actress pick the mantle up and did it for another couple seasons. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched any of those, so I can't speak to the quality of the show. What I do know is that there were some other things that existed in the Arrowverse that really didn't get talked about that should have been, such as Black Lightning.
Yeah, Black Lightning was fucking cool. But they like put it over on a different, like, was it web only?
It was web only.
Like, what the fuck?
It was only like CW.com, use the app to watch it.
I think they were trying to sell their app and they were like gating one of their shows behind the app, I guess. Because like, if you want to see all the stuff, you're going to need to get into that app, right?
I will throw this out there. I know that some people are going to be like, wow, really? But like, if you loved Luke Cage, the show, watch Black Lightning.
Yeah, it's dope.
It's good, man. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a family man who is trying to deal with like being a superhero. Mm-hmm. And like then his kids possibly become superheroes. And like,
yeah, and he has a normal parent reaction to that.
Yeah.
It's very, if y'all saw Quantumania, it's very like Scott being like, yay, I'm Ant-Man and it's my whole career. And then Cassie starts doing it and he's like, why is everyone, you made her a suit? Why is everyone okay? Stop it. No, she's in danger. They're like, danger is kind of what we do, bro.
Yep. And that's kind of the way it is. It's like, what is the legacy? What does legacy mean to a superhero?
Yeah.
And especially a black superhero. Like, these are questions that get asked. And, I highly recommend Black Lightning. I found it to be a fantastic show. I'm glad that he got to show up.
At least one or two crossovers where he shows up and does stuff. And it's like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
But it almost looked like they never kept him around for very long.
Nope. He was kind of a one and done. He'd come up and just give sage advice and then just fuck off.
Yeah. Yeah. Very rarely even using his powers when he crossed over.
Yeah. But the Arrowverse, yeah, it just gave us a lot of good things, man. Like, yeah, there were times it got long in the teeth about it. I could tell, not to even begin to tell you the number of times I complained about the number of flashbacks in Arrow. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It was basically two shows. Yeah. Like for the first several seasons, mm-hmm. It's like, well, are we in the past or are we in the future? And slowly the past would catch up to like the first season.
Right.
And then they just find something else to cut to. Like, oh, remember that time over those 5 years when Oliver was in China?
Right.
Oh, remember that time over those 5 years when Oliver was in base? No. Anyway, yeah, like yeah, they would just like make some shit up or just have something else going on elsewhere. But yeah.
Like when they finally got to the point in the show where the like flashbacks caught up to where the show began at, I was like, oh my God, no more flashbacks. This is going to be great, y'all. We're just going to get a straight Arrow show. And then they start the next season. It's like, meanwhile, in the future's future.
Yeah.
And you're like, is this where we live now? We're gonna instead of
it's going, the future. Okay. The thing about Arrow is whenever they would fast forward to a future, they picked a different Arrow in the future comic to base it on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in one of them, it's like, hey, it's a future now. And it like Oliver's missing his arm. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's canon.
Right.
And this is a different future. He's got a robot arm. But, you know, same costume. It's like, what the fuck's happening right now? Different future later. And, like, Oliver's dead.
Right.
But, like, here's his daughter. And she's an arrowy type person. And here's the Black Canary.
And she's really angry.
Yeah, and she's fucking angry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no one there.
And I will say, for as much grief as one can give the CW shows for maybe not having as much of a budget or any of this stuff, I will say, like Legends of Tomorrow, the Flash remains consistently mid to good.
Yeah, agreed. Well, the cast was just very, very solid.
And it is carried on the back of its cast is really what it is.
Yep.
And we have to really look at the fact that, and I know it sounds silly to say it in this day and age, the Arrowverse introduced people to the multiverse before Marvel did.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, since the first Crisis happened, and Crisis was a thing that was being built up to for like a couple of years.
Yeah, four shows. Like, I think Arrow was at least on like season 4 or 5.
Yeah, and Barry like knew from the beginning of the first season, like there's this thing called Crisis that happens.
Yeah.
And we don't know what it causes it or how we stop it. Mm-hmm. And it was always in the background. So when they finally announced like, hey, it's Crisis on Infinite Earths happening. And everybody went, wait, what?
Yeah.
You know, and we got to do such cool things with the crossover episodes. The shit that DC's pulling out now, like the shit that you saw in the Flash movie with all the fucking past people coming up.
Yeah.
That shit wouldn't have existed if it weren't for the fact that consistently the Flash wanted to bring back old characters. Mm-hmm. When Crisis happened, it was like, yeah, we're going to bring back Tom Welling to be Superman for like 5 seconds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's not forget the Flash was like, hey, you know, all the other actors ever who played the Flash, let's get them all in here.
They're the Flash.
Get them all in here. That one's going to be my dad. That one's going to be the old, like the Flash with the weird helmet. Yeah. That one's going to be a different Flash from the future.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, they got and they didn't. They didn't always point it out.
No.
Sometimes they just did it out of respect. No.
Wonder like, Woman was a really character cool. On Supergirl, I want to say. It was Wonder Woman, Linda Carter, that was it?
Yeah, yeah.
It, like, mm-hmm. showed up on Supergirl. There was never a to-do made about it. It was just...
There she is. Yeah, and it was great.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that as I wind this whole thing down, when I talk about the Arrowverse, there was a lot of filler because, you know, these are shows that had 20
episodes a season. Yeah. And like you didn't have a year between seasons. It was like Grey's Anatomy style. It was like 12 to 13 episodes, maybe like a 5 to 6 week break, another 12 to 13 episodes. They just kept fucking rolling.
Well, and also there was the staggeredness of the shows. You had things like, you know, Arrow and the Flash were airing, you know, your fall lineup.
Right.
Right. December happens. And then like Legends picks up.
Yeah.
Right.
And then you splash some Supergirl in there somewhere. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, the DC Arrowverse was around for so long that it became a consistent part of people's lives.
Oh, yeah.
There's a reason why I'm still ending, like, I'm going to finish watching Supergirl. That is my nail in the coffin to the Arrowverse. Mm-hmm. I watched everything else. And I knew the end was coming. A lot of people had stopped watching at that point.
I did. I think I stopped watching probably 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. I stopped watching the Arrowverse at all, except for Superman and Lois, which we'll get to later.
Yeah. But Yeah, I mean, a lot of people gave up on it, and I see why. It just ran for so long, and it just...
some of the like you just the TV got so good,
right?
And the and they how could they possibly keep up? They can't. You can't write a strongly constructed, tight narrative that fits in 10 episodes in a 22 episode season. And even if you split the season in half and do two of those, you have to write two really good stories at the same time. Yeah. Like, it's fucking wild.
Yeah, it is, and also like. This isn't a bash, but like there was at least those couple of years where we were getting prime deconstruction of superhero content.
Yeah.
And that was things like The Boys, mm-hmm. Invincible
yeah.
was coming out, right? Going and watching those things and then going to the Arrowverse afterwards. It's like,
yeah, it doesn't have the same sting.
Yeah. So what is the legacy of the Arrowverse? I mean, it gave us crossovers. It gave us the multiverse in an accessible way.
Yeah.
It gave us a lot of great characters and great stories. I still think that, you know, Grant Gustin got shafted not getting to be in the Flash movie when Ezra Miller got to be in his fucking show.
Biggest mistake of the entire movie. And that movie is full of mistakes.
Yeah.
I think.
But right now there is one legacy that still exists for the Arrowverse. And that's the Superman show.
Yeah, Superman and Lois. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So Superman and Lois is, again, it's on HBO Max. It premiered with more of a budget and with the actor that they got to play Clark in Supergirl. Mm-hmm. Because Superman was always a thing in Supergirl. He just was in Metropolis and she was somewhere else.
Yep.
And that was the whole deal. And every once in a while he would show up and they're like, what are they going to do with Superman? What are they going to do with Superman? And they picked a great actor. And then they picked a good Lois Lane. Mm-hmm. And then they're finally, we're just like, let's give them their own show. But like, it's Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry to say this because I did like Supergirl as a show. I thought all the actors in it were very good. The writing to me was just never great. The show had a ton of representation. And it carried some good, like, old Supergirl stories, but at the same time, like, the writing was often just kind of bad or boring or practically, like, beating you over the head with its moral while the other shows were good enough to just let subtext be subtext.
Right.
But, the Superman and Lois show is a show that takes place where Superman and Lois have been married for a long time. They have two young sons. And, you know, everyone is, the whole family is aware that Clark is Superman, but because, you know, his mother passes away, they move back to Smallville. You know, it's right back to Kansas in his childhood home, and they try to make a life for themselves there. That's such a cool fucking idea, especially given, like, the family dynamics of your dad being Superman and your family not having any powers until some of them kind of do. They tell good Superman stories. The drama is good. It's better than CW. It's not fucking, you know, it's not The Boys, but it's better quality than the normal CW ever was in terms of effects, in terms of writing. They keep everything tight. They have a good cast of characters that you actually care about things that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And they really make you think about Superman in a lot of different ways, because there comes a point when the family's like, hey, this is affecting my life, not being able to tell people that you're Superman. This person is very close to me. I think we should let them know. And that's such a fucking tough thing to think about, because it makes you think, if I was fucking Superman, at what level of my life and my relationship with someone would I tell them who I am? Would I trust someone with that?
Exactly.
You know, that's just good television.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great show. And I do highly recommend it. And it's still out there. Again, it's on Max.
Still going?
Yeah, it's still going. And I hope they keep making more of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you said, as we wrap up, what the legacy of the Arrowverse to me is a very specific time in my life.
Okay.
And that's when I was working night shift at HP, and I would work 4/10s. So I had Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off. Mm-hmm. I would work, you know, Sunday night through Thursday morning. I'd get out Thursday morning knowing I had an entire week's worth of Arrowverse shows to go home and watch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd grab, you know, whatever food I wanted on my way home. I'd get home. I'd, you know, queue up all my episodes, starting with Arrow, ending with everyone ended last night. I would watch those shows in order, like clockwork, just being like, man, I'm enjoying this. This is good television. What a great way to wind down my week. I did that for years. I did that for as long as I was on night shift, the better part of like a year and a half.
Yeah, we were both watching the Arrowverse around the time that we met.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. It was a lot of talking points for us.
Yep. Yeah. It's crazy to think about. A lot of good memories. I'm glad that it's getting wrapped up, and I'm super happy that they are keeping Superman going for right now, at least.
Yes, so, absolutely.
Yeah. I think that there still exists a world, by the way, in which something like the Arrowverse can happen again. I think it just needs to be where it is for a little bit. Let it rest.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about doing it again, but maybe a little bit more serious.
Yeah.
You know,
like, let's not forget that each individual superhero kind of deserves their own format. You need to learn how to adapt things to the media you put them in. Eternals is a great example of a movie that should have been a TV series.
Absolutely. Moon Knight
is a great example of a series that should have been a movie. Like, or maybe, like, you know, one of those, like, mini series. Like, you get 2-3 episodes max, right. Tell the story. Like, not that I didn't love Moon Knight, and I don't hate the Eternals, but I think there's a lot that they could have done to make the medium better. What I'm trying to say is, when you make a show like Arrow, when you make a show like Flash, putting them in the exact same format and expecting them to interact actively makes their writing worse. I think a future for the Arrowverse or something like a DC television universe, you need to be able to adapt your hero to the medium. And if that means, you know, Arrow gets 10 episodes a season and Flash gets 15 or 8, you know, and we just every once in a while do a fun Legends of Tomorrow 2-hour movie so you can laugh, and you do it like twice a year. You know, you can do all of that, and you can find ways to cross them over without making them all into these little cookie cutter shows, because when you get too many, shit gets oversaturated and become hard to keep up with. Someone made this point recently that there's this thing in the MCU where if you just want to watch all three Guardians of the Galaxy movies, when you get to the third one, spoiler, I guess, for Guardians 3 or for Endgame, when you get to the third movie, if you're just watching those three movies, the main female lead is just dead. And you just kind of have to figure something cool happened in a different movie. And that's kind of what happens with these shows, is if you're not keeping up with all of them, when you start crossing them over, weird shit happens that you need to take back or you need to explain. And it's kind of hard to. So I would really like when they, if they do this again, or if they attempt this again, to take those lessons and give the shows the format and the run length that they need. And when you cross them over, people will be fine with whatever format that takes. Just think carefully about the kind of story you want to tell and adapt the length to that.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is everything that we have for the show this week. If you have some questions, comments, opinions about the Arrowverse or any of the subjects that we talked about today, you can email us at info@goodnight.gg. You can hit me up on Twitter @GNGGcast. You can hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/GNGGcast. Until next time, for Hector, this is James.
And for James, this is Hector.
Everyone, good night.
And good games.